This is Africa News Tonight on the Voice of America.
Good evening and welcome. Welcome to Africa News Tonight from the English to Africa service of the Voice of America, your source for Pan-African news and world developments. I'm Yehiye Suhib in Washington. Coming up on Africa News Tonight...
The military and security agencies have come out strongly that they will ensure peace during the election and that prospective voters should go about their normal duties because tomorrow, Friday, the government has declared it a national public holiday except...
That's from Lagos, VOA staffer Peter Cloti talking about the prospects of violence during Nigeria's presidential election Saturday. Details next. Also, Senegal will wrap up a busy weekend for African politics when President Macky Sall seeks re-election in Sunday's first round of balloting. And Algeria's fractured opposition failed yesterday to pick a lone presidential candidate in the April 18th election. We'll have these stories and lots more ahead on Africa News Tonight. Our top story, campaigning for Nigeria's presidential election ends in a few hours. Then residents will get a day off to travel to the towns where they have registered to vote. Officials say they've already ready to go for Saturday's election from the technical standpoint and that security forces will be prepared to crack down on any troublemakers. My colleague Paul Alexander spoke with VOA staffer Peter Cloti in Lagos about last-minute developments.
Well, the latest development is that opposition political parties today said the presidential candidates of the People's Democratic Party, Atiku Abubakar, remained the only option available to Nigerians in the Saturday election. So they are calling on all Nigerians to vote for Atiku on Saturday in order to reclaim their country. These are their words. In another development, the Independent National Electoral Commission said it's been able to configure all the card readers 100% for the election. So they said they are ready to administer credible elections.
So what are Buhari's people saying in their last message?
Well, they remain confident that... the one they call the incorruptible man who is fighting corruption, who is fighting or improving security and fighting terrorism and improving the economy. The three main pillars on which he's seeking re-election will be retained, and that he's been able to be successful enough for Nigerians to see the work that he has accomplished in the last 3.5 or approximately 4 years. So they are very, very confident and they are bullish about it, that he is going to win re-election despite concerns raised by the opposition that the ruling All Progressive Congress seek to rig the elections. They deny that, of course, and say those accusations are without merit. And they even accused the main opposition party of working or colluding with the Independent National Electoral Commission just to rig the election to ensure President Muhammadu Buhari does not does not get re-elected.
And so what are the thoughts on these warnings of possible terror attacks?
Not really. The military and security agencies have come out strongly that they will ensure peace during the election and that prospective voters should go about their normal duties because tomorrow, Friday, the government has declared it a national public holiday, except bankers who would have to go to the banks and pay public sector workers. But this is what they are saying, that they will be deployed across the country to ensure a peaceful environment. In another development, the Vice President, Yemi Osinbajo, has denied media reports that he has resigned.
So what is the mood with just a day to go? All the campaigning is done now, right?
The campaign officially is supposed to end at 12 midnight tonight. And then Friday is a national public holiday that the officials say is aimed at allowing Nigerians to go back to their hometowns where they pretty much registered to vote, so they can go back there and vote. The chairman of the INEC, Professor Mahmoud Yakubu, said it is only an act of God that can prevent Saturday's election from being held.
That was VOA staffer Peter Cloti in Lagos speaking with VOA's Paul Alexander. As reported, Nigerian President Muhammadu Buhari has ordered a crackdown on political troublemakers during the rescheduled elections Saturday. Buhari made the declaration at a meeting of the ruling All Progressive Congress Caucus meeting in Abuja. The Independent National Electoral Commission says it will stand by the Electoral Act, which states that persons who snatch election materials can be sentenced to 2 years in prison or fined about $1,600. Ibim Sementari is a former commissioner for information and communications in River State. She spoke to reporter Mike Mbonye about the implications of Buhari's order. She says Nigerian security personnel are trained and will not go overboard.
I think that they should be very capable. Don't forget that we're dealing with trained security personnel. And sometimes we forget that people are trained in the work they do. I do not expect any of them to go overboard, because that truly would be unacceptable in a democratic dispensation. I'm sure that they're conscious and aware of the fact that the eyes of Nigerians and the world are on them. I'm sure that they understand that this could mar their credibility. And so I do not think that they would be going overboard. But, you know, quite frankly, why should anyone want to snatch a ballot box?
What do you think their orders will be as far as what they can do?
Well, I listened to the Chief of Army Staff speak, and if I go by what he said, one of the things he said clearly was that the army should stay away from election arena. So clearly, I think that those orders are quite clear, up to the point where he even said that for retired army officers, who of course by their rank have the complement of junior officers guarding them, if those ones were going to get to the polling booths, that no military personnel should be found within that axis. So I think they have a clear order as to the tolerance levels of where they have to, how far they can go and how far they can be. I do not expect that they would be ordered to do anything untoward. I listened to the Chief of Army Staff, and what he said was that the army would deal decisively. Well, some would say that's pretty open-ended, but I would like to think that he's talking basically about taking measures to ensure that culprits are brought to book.
What impact has the election postponement had on the prospects of trouble? What is the biggest prospect for troublemakers, politicians and their allies, Boko Haram? What about cheating?
This is actually a two-edged sword. On the one hand, you're thinking perhaps the postponement has led to a de-escalation of tensions. And I think that that's the feel I get, that you have a de-escalation of tensions. It was quite tense in River State, where I reside, ahead of last week's election. There was a bit of tension, a bit of everyone a little unsure of what was going to happen. So I think that there's been some de-escalation of that tension. I hope it doesn't build up again. I hope that INEC is able to manage the process such that it doesn't build up again. So yeah, we've had that de-escalation. However, the prospect of cheating, again, if I go by what the INEC chairman said, perhaps we might have had higher prospects if it had held last week, where you had different materials, sensitive materials going to different locations. Our hope is that that doesn't repeat itself. But, you know, I think that it's important for us as citizens of this country to see that it doesn't serve our democracy any good when we engage in violent acts like ballot snatching. I don't see why any Nigerian, anyone, should support it. Our democracy is fragile, and we've got to be careful so that we do not throw away the baby with the bathwater. Then that will happen pretty soon, the way we're going, if we don't manage our behavior and approach to some of the conversations I've seen on social media. I do not think for any reason that any Nigerian should engage in snatching a ballot box. I also do not think that anybody who engages in snatching a ballot box should just be dealt with without going through the process. I think there's a process, and we should go through those processes. But if you carry a gun to snatch a ballot box, then it means you planned to kill. And that is not a good thing.
That was Ibim Sementari, former Commissioner of Information and Communications in River State. She spoke with reporter Mike Mbonye in Port Harcourt, Nigeria. Senegal will wrap up a busy weekend for African politics when President Macky Sall seeks re-election in Sunday's first round of balloting. Saal is the clear favorite among the five candidates and could win the race outright if he can take a majority. Otherwise, a second round is scheduled for March 24th. Saal has been praised for 6% economic growth last year, the highest rate in Africa, and also for expanding electrical service. But he is criticized for cracking down on dissent. His main challengers are former Prime Minister Idrissa Seck and 44-year-old political rookie Osman Sonko, who is popular among the country's youth who complain about lack of jobs. Two other candidates were eliminated because of alleged corruption. A televised candidates' debate is scheduled for today, though President Macky Sall isn't participating. You're listening to African News Tonight, live on the following frequencies, 15580 and 6080 kilohertz on the Voice of America. I'm Yehi Suhib in Washington. Sixteen past the hour, here's a recap of our top stories. Nigeria's election is on track for Saturday, and officials say security forces will be prepared to crack down on any troublemakers. And Senegal will wrap up a busy weekend for African politics when President Macky Sall seeks re-election in Sunday's first round of balloting. And for more news and information, visit our website at voaafrica.com. Zimbabwe's former finance minister and one of the opposition leaders recently hinted that the government was working on introducing a currency of its own. Yesterday, the central bank governor presented his monetary policy, which brought in a raft of changes, as well as making the local surrogate currency an official medium of exchange. Reporter Kuzai Zanawashi has details.
Reserve Bank of Zimbabwe Governor John Mangudya presented the much-awaited monetary policy.
The economy took a different course of direction, a positive economic trajectory to the inflationary environment by the last quarter of 2018. This situation is immediately addressed in order to resolve the flow of money demand.
Local bond notes officially were on par with the US dollar, but were going for 3 or 4 to the dollar on the black market. Mangudya says that had fostered a three-tier pricing system where one item would have a US dollar price and different prices for bond notes. The electronic version of the bond notes, known as the real-time gross settlement or RTGS. Mangudya says the pricing was contributing towards an inflationary environment, and explained some of the measures the central bank was doing to resolve the situation.
This statement, therefore, presents policies aimed at establishing a trading mechanism of RTGS balances and bond notes with international currencies through establishing an interbank foreign exchange market to restore domestic competitiveness and promote growth in the economy.
He adds that this will lure back much-needed foreign currency for external transactions and maintain the buying power of the bond notes, or RTGS dollars, as they are now known. The governor said the exchange rate will be detected by market forces and the central bank won't interfere. While the RTGS dollars cannot be exchanged for other currencies internationally, soon Zimbabweans will be able to use them to buy foreign currency from banks. Until now, such a trade was considered illegal and only took place in the black market. Financial expert Believe Chifurutse explains some of the effects of the monetary policy.
This is not something that can boost the confidence in the market. This has just weakened the income that the layman is getting in Zimbabwe. But the layman gets the RTGS dollar, which is now been weakened by the rate which is being corresponding to the US dollar at this point.
Chifurutse says the gross devaluation of the civil services salaries is not the only effect. Rather, he foresees cases where some government departments will start asking for US dollars for services. The new policy will fence in some of the critical sectors, such as energy, medical, and fuel, where they will continue to rely on the central bank to source the foreign currency they need to remain operational. Critics say there may be chaos in the labor sector, as most people that are employed have their contracts written that they will be paid in US dollars, and the alternative may continue to lose value against the US dollar. They are skeptical the policy will rein in the rising inflation. This currency shift is happening against a renewed threat of a bread shortage looming after the government failed to pay for another wheat consignment. For VOA, this is Kudzai Zinavashe from Harare.
Algeria's fractured opposition failed yesterday to pick a lone presidential candidate in the April 18th election. If they cannot join forces quickly, their dissension would bolster President Abdelaziz Bouteflika's prospects of winning a fifth five-year term, even though he is 81 and still trying to recover from a 2013 stroke that has left him largely out of the public eye. The political battle pits fear of instability if Bouteflika is unseated against desires for a new path forward for the country. While two former prime ministers and the head of a moderate Islamist party attended yesterday's five-hour meeting, other opposition figures, including retired Army General Ali Goderi, didn't show up and have said they may boycott the vote. Those who were present said they need time to talk with their parties about a common platform and candidate. The UN Special Envoy to Western Sahara, Horst Kohler, is preparing for a second round of discussions between Morocco and the Polisario Front in hopes of settling Africa's longest territorial dispute. Meanwhile, the Sahrawi government renewed its call for a referendum of self-determination. Morocco, on the other hand, insists on its offer to grant the Sahrawi people self-autonomy while retaining control over defense and foreign affairs. William Lawrence, professor of international relations at George Washington University, spoke to VOA senior analyst Mohamed El-Shenawi about the challenges that Kohler faces to settle the Western dispute.
Well, with extreme difficulty. Certainly these are their positions since the early 90s and before, although we've had several new articulations since then. But neither is moving from its maximalist position, and the envoy has taken a step-by-step approach, which is all about trying to build confidence between the two sides. And so far, they haven't agreed to anything yet, and it will be very difficult, even with a step-by-step approach, to accomplish much.
The UN Security Council called on the two sides to be realistic and willing to compromise in order to achieve a mutually acceptable political solution. Is there any room for such thing?
Well, both sides are making the right gesture. Certainly, the Polisario side has been very positive in their recent communications, responding directly to the request from the UN. And Morocco as well has been making the right noises. And of course, when they got together in December, it was the first time the two sides had spoken face-to-face under UN auspices in over 6 years. So the context is good, the mood is good, but we saw no concessions at the December meeting, nor is anyone expecting important concessions at the March meeting. The envoy will be meeting with the two sides individually in February to try to lay groundwork for some progress. But he's raised four issues of possible confidence building, and neither side has shown much willingness to make compromises just in these trust-building measures.
How could the UN envoy solve the permanent problem of who has the right to vote if any referendum is approved by Morocco?
Well, this is, of course, the largest problem because, first of all, Morocco doesn't want a referendum, as you stated earlier. And second of all, I think they agreed in the 1990s on 90,000 voters and disagreed on 140,000 voters. Plus, Moroccan advocates have been advancing this new idea that pretty much anyone who's been living in the Western Sahara since 1999 should be able to vote, which is a new wrinkle and certainly something that would be rejected outright by the Polisario side. So we've seen no progress on voter registration and voter qualification since the 1990s.
The recently approved U.S. budget included a $1 million assistance for the Sahrawi people through the Moroccan government. What does that mean in terms of U.S. position toward that conflict?
Well, it means several things. First of all, it's a continuation of the Obama administration policy, and that's significant. It's also important that the U.S. is continuing assistance, something that Congress has been calling for, and continuing it under the auspices of Morocco's assistance package. My biggest problem with the assistance is that it really isn't doing anything yet. We haven't seen assistance that's actually had an impact on lives in Western Sahara.
But does that mean the U.S. is recognizing the authority of the Moroccan government over the Western Sahara?
Absolutely not. Certainly there's been a lot in the press saying that by the U.S. continuing to funnel the money through the Moroccan assistance, that that amounts to some kind of recognition. But that is absolutely not the case. The debate recently was simply about whether or not there'd be a new carve-out for Western Sahara separately, since it's a sovereign country. And that was a new wrinkle. But in the end, they decided that it just made more sense to put the money in the Moroccan basket. But the U.S. Policy has been unchanged since 2007, that it finds the Moroccan autonomy plan credible, realistic, and serious. But does not recognize Morocco's claims to Western Sahara, nor does any other country in the world.
That was William Lawrence, a professor of international relations at George Washington University, speaking with VOA's Mohamed Al-Shenawy. A new report by Human Rights Watch claiming police killed at least 27 people in operations against gang violence in the DRC's capital last year underscores the challenges facing new president Felix Tshisekedi in ending abuses. Kinshasa's police chief, General Silvano Kosongo, who was accused in the report of close involvement in the operation, told Reuters that it did not happen. Government officials have made similar denials in recent years. The Human Rights Watch report said masked police detained unarmed young men in late-night operations and killed them. It said some victims had marks indicating that their arms had been tied behind their backs, and according to reports, at least three had amputated genitals. And that wraps up this edition of Africa News Tonight. I'm Yehiz Wahib in Washington. For all the latest developments on the continent 24/7, visit our website at voaafrica.com. Please stay tuned to the sunny side of sports coming up at 18:30 UTC. On behalf of our producer, Bill Workinger, and our engineer, Bill Androdi, thanks for choosing The Voice of America.
This is Peter Clote of VOA Africa. I am in Nigeria to cover the general election. Listen to my daily reports when you tune in to our news shows. Africa News Tonight, Daybreak Africa, Nightline Africa, and International Edition for the latest from Lagos.
Hello, I'm Douglas Simpoga, host of VOA's Reporters Roundtable. Join us every Thursday as we discuss important African topics and events. I'll have a panel of African journalists and expert guests to discuss the topic at hand. We take a deeper look at important African news topics. That's Reporters Roundtable every Thursday at 17:30 UTC, right here on VOA Africa.
Hey, sports fans, brighten your day by tuning in to the sunny side of sports Monday through Friday at 1630 and 1830 UTC. Join us on Facebook at facebook.com/VOA Sunny and on Twitter at VOA Sunny Sports. Or check out the blog at blogs.voanews.com/sunny. It's the sunny side of sports right here on the Voice of America.